America Meditating Radio Show, we collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts 24/7. Hi, I'm Sister Jenna. Join me and guests on Blog Talk Radio as we amplify stories that compel us to be more for ourselves and everyone else around us. Do you like to meditate? Have you tried to meditate? Have you struggled with meditation? Why don't you visit one of the Brahma Kumaris Meditation Center? Visit brahmakumaris.org.
Blaylock Dialysis Center is a convenient state-of-the-art dialysis center in the Houston area, run by Dr. Panakin Patel. Relax in a comfortable environment while receiving quality care. Serving adults 18 to geriatrics, we are here to help you. Call 713-463-6611 for more information, or visit us at our website at www.blaylockdialysiscenter.com. Blaylock Dialysis Center, where helping you get well is our priority. The Azar Foundation for Children of the World is an organization aimed to support women and children in need across the globe. We believe in empowering lives, strengthening minds, and providing programs that enrich health and education. The Azar Foundation was founded in 2003 and has been serving the world ever since. Visit us at our website at www.azarforchildren.org. That's www.azar4children.org to find out more information about our endeavors and join our mailing list. Remember, the smile and the cry of a child doesn't have any language. The Azar Foundation.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to America Meditating Radio. I'm your host, Sister Jenna, and I want to give a big shout-out to Shaheen Muffy from the Azar Foundation that's doing incredible work for orphans around the world. She was also doing some work for Syrian refugees. So for those of us who really believe a lot in charity and the desire to keep being of aid to each other, it's really vital that we continue to be kind, be generous, and be as conscious-minded as we possibly can. Now more than ever, we're being called to love at a level I don't think that we are used to. Maybe mothers are accustomed to it, having teenagers. You know what that feels like. Well, the whole world is being invited to embody the quality of a mother so that we can love despite whatever other differences that are happening around us and maybe in us, more than anything else, in us. Stay tuned. We're going to have the incredible Mastin Kip. And what Mastin doesn't know, I swear to you, and I'm not making this up, I dreamt about Mastin last night, and I had no idea that the producers were going to be having him on the air today. So stay tuned if you want to hear a little bit about what daily love is all about. Before we get Mastin on the air, why don't we do what we do best? Gosh, America, let's just let go of all the stuff that's surrounding us, because if we're going to survive ourselves, survive maybe leadership that we're challenged to understand what it all means, to survive a future for our children to walk into, we're going to have to need to let go of these emotions. The Women's March, a global expression of what it's like to nurture and to have a voice of the people, basically say, we would like to come to the table. We would like to have a conversation about issues that matter to us because it's our lives. Without us, there is no such thing as leadership, a government, a kingdom, a rulership. And so they spoke out. And just recently, I was told that President Trump signed an anti-abortion bill. And I'm not quite sure what all of that means. I don't know if it's definitely was always on the agenda, and the Women's March just happened to have happened, and the enormous amount of turnout for a global issue. It was a global turnout. This wasn't just a national turnout. This wasn't just women only marching on the nation's mall, on the national mall, but this was the whole country was marching for rights, for their constitutional rights, for their personal rights, but I also think for their spiritual rights. And then there's an anti-abortion bill that's passed. So please contact your state representatives, your House representatives. Let them know what you're thinking and feeling. You've got to go online and find the phone number, the email, and send them a note about what matters to you. Do you want government to have control over how you should take care of your body? Do you want government to have control about how your health should be monitored and how much it should be taken care of? And I will tell you honestly, everybody, when you think from love, you're going to want to take care of everyone. And I have to emphasize this like I do in all of our conversations. You've got to take care of yourself. You want better health care? Exercise. Eat well. Think well. You want better education? Buckle down a little bit more in the books. You want to be able to have the freedom to share and express yourself? Do so. But try to do it as peacefully as possible so that the minds of those that might be ridden with a lot of confusion or a lack of clarity can hear your calm and peaceful, clear conviction that I believe in love and I believe in a sustainable future where we can all understand and manage ourselves better. Take a deep breath, my friends. Don't hang up and don't touch that dial. We're going to have Mastin Kemp on the line shortly. Breathe in and out. Here's Letting Go from Off the Grid Into the Heart Meditation CD. Om Shanti. The time that we choose to be aware doesn't necessarily require me to just sit and meditate. But even while I walk and move around, I can be in a meditative awareness, which is awareness of the soul, the original, eternal, imperishable being of light. For a little while, I'd like to invite you to be present, to be here, and to be now. Allow your mind to settle in the moment, to relax. This meditation is about awareness. It's about becoming aware of your original and eternal self. It's about connecting to your truth. Let go of your name. And observe yourself feeling nameless. Let go of your gender to discontinue thinking you're a man or a woman. Let it go and observe how you would feel walking around without a gender. Let go of the role that you play and let go of the titles that you own. Observe how you're feeling as you are gradually letting go. Let go of your religion and put it aside just for now. And let go of your nationality and even the language that you're accustomed to. Imagine you have no name, gender, role, title, religion, nationality, or even a language. Ask yourself, how do you feel at this moment? And in this feeling,
who would think of you, and who would you think of? The Supreme Soul would think of you, and you, the liberated soul, would think of the Supreme. In this state of absolute freedom, I am truly who I am. A free, peaceful, pure, immortal, eternal soul. Allow yourself to just be absorbed in this awareness. At this time,
welcome back, everyone, and Om Shanti to that, right? You must admit that takes you in a place that you want to live from, this place of being completely embodied with love and power. Well, I'm privileged to introduce Mastin Kipp. Mastin is the founder of thedailylove.com, a website, daily email, and Twitter account that serves soulful inspirations to a new generation. See, what began as a simple sharing of quotes being sent to friends transformed into the Daily Love after a tweet from Kim Kardashian, and the love monster was born. Today we have a conversation with the amazing Mastin Kipp. Motivational leaders like Tony Robbins, Marianne Williamson, Arianna Huffington, Oprah Winfrey, and many more. Consider this millennial a voice of profound transformation for our times. Mastin's mission is to connect people back to what makes them really happy. And happy people make better choices, and better choices make a better planet. Mastin, thank you for joining us, especially after dreaming about you last night.
Hi, Sister Jenna. It's a real pleasure to be here. I'm really excited to be here today.
Me too. I can't believe it. Mastin, I have to tell you, it's like, how did you end up in my consciousness last night? Is it because we were going to have this heart-to-heart conversation today?
I think so. I think so. You know, when stuff like that happens, you know, there's always something greater guiding us. So, yeah, that's really fantastic. I heard you say that, and I was like, what?
I know. I couldn't believe it either. But I was saying, maybe Mastin was thinking of me, too.
Totally. No, I was. We were working on confirming this, and I was on an airplane and couldn't confirm it until I landed. So, but very, very
wow.
Happy and excited to be here today. I love that. Synchronicity.
Me too, my brother. Me too. Thank you. You know, first I want to ask you, how did you feel when Kim Kardashian actually shared your tweet and the day after you found yourself in a whole different paradigm of showing up to the self and the world? I mean, has fame changed you at all?
Well, there's a couple parts to that question. So let me first talk about how I felt. So at the time, I was couch surfing, and I was living in an 8x8 pool house and very much uncertain as to whether this crazy idea was the right idea, because I had left my corporate job and had decided that I'm basically unemployable and I'm never going back, and I'm going to go all in on the blog that I had started at the time, The Daily Love. And so when that happened, you know, it was a real, it was a confirmation. And I was really grateful because I was really doubting whether I should continue or not. So it was a really fantastic confirmation to keep going. And I don't necessarily think that it brought me fame. I think that there's a level of, there's definitely a community of people across the world who engage in my content, in my brands, on our different social pages and stuff like that. But I really sort of see it as a platform to really serve. And one of the biggest decisions I've made, this is probably in the last like year and a half, was because, you know, coming from Hollywood and I was a manager in the music business and I saw what fame did to people, I really had always kind of shied away from that. But in the last probably 18 months, I've had a much different intention. And I've really become aware of the fact that if you want to be a change agent on this planet, one of the biggest decisions you have to make is to allow your gifts to be seen, which without that context could look like, you know, coming out and having an ego or a desire for fame. But if you can't mm-hmm. be seen and your gifts can't be seen and, you know, what God put in your heart can't be shown to the world, then you're not going to be able to really make your mark on the planet. So I've really made it my intention to let my gifts be seen, but with a really deep intention of service. That's a really big through line, because the fame and all that stuff, like, that stuff comes and goes, and being in Hollywood, you know, what's hot today is not necessarily hot tomorrow. And, you know, right. I think for me, the intention on focus on service and on helping people, that's always relevant, you know.
Have you ever felt compromised, Mastin, like as the demand increases, the expectations increase, maybe from folks who have found refuge in your thoughts and in your words? Have you ever found yourself compromising certain values that you thought you never would?
I wouldn't say it that way, but what I would say is I would find myself compromising in ways I never thought about.
I love that.
I guess what I mean by that is, you know, especially like what we're doing, what you're doing, what I'm doing, like there's a level of business to it, and people call me an entrepreneur, and that's not entirely accurate, because entrepreneurs, what we do, a pure entrepreneur identifies a problem and builds systems and a structure around solving that problem and then sells that thing and starts something else. That's a pure entrepreneur. I think entrepreneurial, meaning that we have to start a business because it's how we get our art and our work and our message out. But my guess is you're like me, where like this is like your mission, who you're going to be the rest of your life. This is what you want to be doing to your dying breath. And so that's not really being an entrepreneur. So in the early days of starting this business, you know, you got to scramble to, you know, get clients, to make ends meet, to pay the rent, to, you know, couch surf for 2 years, you know, to put food in your mouth. Mm-hmm. And I think that as I've matured and the business has matured, we've been really mindful of being really specific about who we want to serve, because, you know, without a level of discernment of who we work with, you know, my intention is to work with clients that energize me just as much as I energize them. So it's not so much about their financial well-being as it is their desire to change, to grow, to listen, to absorb the information, to apply it, to not have it just be like momentary inspiration, but to people who are really dedicated to lifestyle. So I think probably the biggest lesson I've had has been compromising, or not even knowing that I'm compromising, working with certain people simply because I was afraid of the, you know, not being able to have enough money for the rent, and recognizing that the more clear I get on who I want to work with and who I want to serve and how that makes me feel, that actually like the universe or God really kind of clears out and brings in incredible folks. But it's faith in action. So, you know, I've definitely been guilty of in the past, unknowingly or unconsciously, just deciding to work with anyone and everyone, and that has definitely caused me undue stress, to say the least.
Some concerns.
Yes.
It's funny, I was on a plane, we were heading to Oprah, and myself and Panache were having this heart-to-heart conversation about sometimes the economical struggle of transformational leaders in terms of their message and how challenging it can be to be playing a part of a narrative to help inspire and empower people. I mean, we ourselves witnessed what Oprah went through when she left her talk show and started OWN, the incredible uphill battle it was to try to make people believe in their purpose and believe in their own stories. And I remembered how Panache was so surprised. I says, well, you know, for me it's different. I've lived such a simplistic life, and I'm surrounded by such a large unit of female energy, you know, the Brahma Kumaris. And you know, our biggest concern has always been that spiritual foundation will bring the abundance. And even though, you know, yeah, it's not like a major thing, there are times that you have to still get down to the, you know, the nook and cranny of things and go, we've got to make sure we take care of these responsibilities. And I think it teaches us how to integrate and combine the inner and the outer. And I think perhaps one of the best things for us to understand is that poverty is a sin, abundance isn't. And I think a lot of people that come into spirituality think they have to keep letting go so much of themselves that they're zero. And I keep trying to say, no, it's your spirituality that should be expanding everything. And I don't necessarily mean a million volunteers or million likes, but just good people around you is your proof that you're doing well.
Yes.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, when I think about, like, what my purpose is, like, my biggest purpose in life, you know, Peter Diamantis, the founder of XPRIZE, who's a futurist, he talks about this idea of a moonshot. And a moonshot is an idea so big that you may not be able to achieve it in your lifetime, but, like, shoot for it because you have no idea, like, what could happen. And, like, his moonshot is, like, there's an asteroid that's coming near Earth in the next few years, and he wants to harvest $1 trillion of minerals off of this asteroid and bring it back to Earth, right? So that's a big idea. My big idea, and for why I'm here, is to end trauma in my lifetime, because I think trauma is hereditary, and it gets passed down from generation to generation unconsciously. And so in that aim, I think that the way in which you do that is you have to help people understand what the root cause of why they're stuck is, and then reassociate them with their purpose, which, because when you have your purpose and you know what your purpose is, it changes everything. It's better than medicine. It's better than, you know, any amount of sugar or relationships or alcohol or any of that type of stuff. And the biggest objection I've seen after working with thousands of people that people have to living their purpose is this idea that if I live my purpose, I will be broke. And we're trapped in this sort of like this survival fear, and like, if I live my purpose, I'm going to hurt my family because it's too selfish, or I'm going to hurt my family because they'll be out on the street with me. And so there's this survival trap that we're in. And I think that that's sort of not just for people in general. I think that's for all thought leaders, human beings in general, that this is, there's this idea that if I follow my calling, I won't be provided for by God. And so I think that I'm doing a long-winded answer to your question here, but it's providing context. So I think that at the end of the day, it's really about how wealthy you feel emotionally rather than how wealthy you are physically with in terms of finances. However, I do believe, as you said, that when you step into that spiritual path, that the abundance follows. But you have to change your orientation to how you perceive what's going on in your life. And the idea that how many likes I have on Facebook or how many times something got shared, you know, those are important KPIs and metrics to measure. However, you shouldn't say, well, I'm less of a person or a soul because I only have this many things and those who have that many things. I think that at the end of the day, you know, I think some of the greatest teachers I've ever had have been the indigenous people of Bali. And my friend Agoon, you know, like there's no homelessness there. They have family. Yes, they have their issues. They have their drama. You know, things still happen there. But at the end of the day, there's no homelessness. People live together. Everybody's fed. And there's a real sense of community there. And so I think that where we're heading and what I would like to model for the world and have our clients model is this idea of emotional wealth first, meaning they're fulfilled, they're happy, they're lit up on the inside, and then having that financial abundance come. And the financial abundance could be depending on how much you consume, right? $10,000 a year or $10 million a year. So it's not necessarily how much money you have. It's how you relate to it and also how you use it. And at the end of the day, I think how emotionally wealthy you are on the inside.
Of course, at the end of the day, it's really that, how you're feeling internally. Love, it is, and it's amplifying very much in our country personally. And I've been to 90 countries, so I know the way that we are here in America. And there's so much that America could learn about community. I'm not saying that we're not community-oriented, but I know what community is when I get out of a car in India with 10 people for a car that's only suited for three.
Yeah, exactly.
Talk about community and adjustments, right?
Exactly.
Van Jones has begun a love army, and you've been doing the daily love. Any thought of collaborating? Because we recently witnessed just this massive collaboration between so many groups for the Women's March recently, and it had a great impact globally. And one of the things that I've been wanting to do is to really bring all of these incredible spiritual leaders together and have them make a declaration that we're in this together, and to be able to really have a massive portal for these voices to be told. So, I mean, any thoughts about collaborating with Van Jones on the Love Army and the Daily Love?
If I had the opportunity to collaborate with Van Jones on anything, the answer would be hell yes. with you, that would be incredible. You know, I think one of the biggest things about organizing like political action or movement, a civil rights movement, you know, you look at the great, right? Martin Luther King Jr., right? He was probably one of the greatest organizers of a civil rights movement ever. And they had a really clear message, really clear steps on what the action would be. And I think that, you know, I was so inspired by the women's movement, and I would love to see that moment, which is a huge moment in time, turn into a movement. And there needs to be organizing principles and values and specific legislation. Mm-hmm. Because what happened was with, what was that, the 99% Occupy movement, is that there was this mm-hmm. outpouring of emotion, but there was not
right.
a focused leadership or intention. So I think that in organizing something, we have to really think about what that would be so that it can be an organization and something that's going for something. Because I think that the expression of emotion or frustration or powerlessness or unity, in this case with the Women's March, is so necessary. And what I do, I'm really big on like turning like ideas and passion into like results. And I think
right.
that the results here would have to be, we have to really organize. And I think that would take some serious thought. And I am so down for that, because I think that, you know, right now there needs to be a significant voice of, I won't say the left, I will just say of people who have a certain heart for community and love and inclusion and, you know, understanding that whether you're black or white or Muslim or LGBT and now Q, they're adding that one on there too
mm-hmm.
as well. Like all of these people,
mm-hmm.
it's just as American as apple pie. And
yeah.
that just because we have a leader in office who is, you know, opening his inaugural address with doom and gloom and blood does not necessarily mean that he represents the majority of how we are thinking. However, we need to organize in a way that would be effective rather than just purely about sentiment, because I think that the left has been guilty of having a lot of sentiment, but not a lot
right.
of strong-willed, like organized action. You know, I think that.
I think this is where I've often heard at the UN portals. You know, like war is organized. Peace isn't. So peace movements tend to struggle. And I think most of the times that they tend to struggle is the funding to back their cause, to back that movement, because most of the money goes to where you can get the quick money and the power and the fame and all of that. And I have to tell you, Monday morning after the march, everyone woke up with an email about the steps to take. And I think if that went out to millions of people around the world and people are actually implementing these steps, I think that's a very, very positive sign. And
well,
the fact that I
would love to see that email. I would love to see it. So if you could forward that
yeah.
to me, that would be amazing.
I will. All right, so now on the personal and deeply revealing level, as a life interventionalist, which I love that, if you were president, what would you do for America?
Oh, my God. What a crazy, awesome question. So first, let me explain what an interventionist is. So an interventionist is someone who comes into a situation, discovers the root cause that's causing it, and clears it so that you can move forward and create progress. Like, that's what we do. That's
Beautiful.
What I do. And there's a lot of stuff I'm not good at. Like changing a tire, I could probably do it, but it wouldn't be – so you wouldn't want to drive on the car for very long. but this work is something that I is my superpower. It's my thing. And so in it, especially when you get like into a relationship interventions where there's like two people in the argument or a dispute, what has to be understood is that both sides are wrong and both sides are right. And the goal is to get both sides to take down the armor and understand that I need to connect with the other side. And even if I don't agree with their perspective, to really listen. And the thing that I've noticed about today's political scene is that it's so polarized that both sides, the left, the right, the far left, the far right, you know, they have this like really deep victimization mentality where it's like, no, I'm the hurt one and you're hurting me. And when you come from that perspective, you essentially just perpetuate infinite argumentation and stress and blame. And when you're coming to a relationship from a place of blame and blame only, where you have to prove how wounded you are and how wounded they made you, then you're never going to make any meaningful progress because you're not going to be listening to the other side. So if I were president today, what I would have done is I think it would have been such an incredible move for President Trump to do this, is to go to the Women's March and to speak and to say that I see you and I hear you and this is inspiring, and to really take a moment to get outside of his own paradigm and dogma and desire to start strong and really listen. Because the thing is, without listening to people and really helping people feel heard, what's going to happen is this resistance movement is going to snowball into something far more powerful than what we're seeing today. And I like to take things in at really big and make them really simplistic, right? So I want you to imagine for a second a relationship with a masculine partner and a feminine partner, right? And in any relationship, this can be male-female, male-male, female-female, it doesn't matter. But in any relationship, there's always these arguments, right? And usually it goes something like this. The masculine partner feels criticized, and the feminine partner feels unsafe. That's kind of how it goes. And what happens is we get into these arguments where we argue about details that have nothing to do with the real issue, right? Like, well, you said this, no, you said that, no, you said this, no, you said that. And what both sides are really looking for is the recognition of like, hey, I see you and I hear you and what you're saying to me matters. And so when you take on the most powerful office in the land, all of a sudden you have transcended your political party and you certainly have transcended your campaign rhetoric. And your job and your duty now is to let all Americans know that they are seen and that they are heard versus stoking the fire. And so what I would do is I would make a really conceited effort to come off as and really be intentional around someone who is listening, who is hearing, who is reflecting what they're saying, even if I don't fully agree with it, and to probably have a roundtable with the leaders in that space to really unite America. And unfortunately, what's happening today is, and this is not a political issue, it's a level of consciousness issue. What's happening with our current administration is that they are currently stoking the fire of resistance and doubling down on this righteous need to be significant and to be right. And unfortunately, you know, for them, we live in a day and age of transparent internet connection and community connectivity.
Yeah.
The propaganda and the lying and all that stuff, like there's no way that they're going to be able to get away with that like maybe former administrations who have tried to do this have. Like the propaganda doesn't work. So I would be really keen on helping folks recognize, and also people on the right, letting them know, like, I see you and I hear you, and create a conversation and a dialogue where we take it out of this macro conversation about who's right and wrong and really personalize it and get to know, you know, Jane from the left and John from the right and really make it a personal story rather than a statistic because on both sides, people are not feeling heard right now. So you as a leader, you've got to make it your priority to tell people, to help as many people as possible feel heard, and that will calm tensions and also allow him to, have a productive administration.
That's so beautiful, Mastin, and spoken like a true millennial, because I know that on the White House website, the comment lines have been taken off. And in, I think, a recent appointee member for, I think, Energy or something, some decision was made. I'm going to be totally off, but it was told not to speak to the public. So how do you engage in a comment? Let's just, you're present for a day, okay? How do you get into that energy? Because the energy is saying, no, we don't want you in because we have a completely different vision as to what we want to do for this country, this administration, and so on. They're not letting the right and everyone in. They're only letting people in that support them. What would we do? What can we do?
Can you clarify? Do you mean, like, what would I do if I was in, like, if I were to reverse it now?
Well,
or how would I?
No, my first question that you answered was great. If you were president, this is what you would do. Now, second question, I needed to be clear. You're on the other side now, and the leadership has basically closed a lot of doors for you to access it, to be able to collaborate. Any thoughts that you would have that would help to open that door of trust and dialogue? Because the White House website comment things are down. A lot of people are not getting access. The media is not getting much access as to what the administration is doing. So then the people don't know, except for whatever social media rhetoric is going out there. That's the only way that people have access, and that's one-sided.
Yes.
Any thoughts coming from your point of view? How can we open up that gate of trust and dialogue?
A couple things. It depends on how – so this kind of reminds me a little bit of like trying to get an addict to be sober, right? It's like you're basically asking me, like, how do you make someone do something they don't want to do, right? So there's a couple different ways. First, I really do think that from the media's perspective, because when I look at a situation, I look at it without emotion, and I take my political affinity away, and I look at what's going on for real, right? And the facts are really obvious. You know, on one hand, there's blatant lies happening from the administration that's been well documented and covered, so I won't speak to that. However, I do believe that you know, like the example of the reporter who's in the White House, in the Oval Office, and tweeting about the Martin Luther King bust being removed. I do believe that it would be appropriate for, because one of the biggest ways to end an argument is to go, you know what, you're right. So if the media were to say, you know what, President Trump, look, we have had some misses here, and we're going to own that. I think that would go a really long way, because it still gets into this blame cycle, because you can't generalize and say everything someone does is always bad always, right? Like, that's just not how human beings are. It's just not how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And we do, in any disagreement, have our side to it. So now, look, the campaign rhetoric and everything that has been said by President Trump, formerly candidate Trump, has been extremely divisive and very polarizing. I think that's how you get through in a fractured media landscape. And unfortunately, it's continuing to go forward in that direction. So the first thing I would do is I would say, if I were CNN or any of these other networks, I would say, you know what, we fucked up. Pardon my language. We messed up.
That's okay. You're
and,
young.
we messed up. And, you know, it's this is something that we won't do again, right? Simultaneously, what I would do is you would look at leverage points. So whenever you want to get someone to do something they don't want to do, you have to figure out what's the leverage, right? And one of the biggest leverage points that we have as a culture and as a media is the reaction to these crazy things that he does. And I think it would just be stopping the reaction, because I think that it's clear this administration enjoys attention. And the less attention that we can give them for bad behavior, I think the better. And really reporting on the facts. So we have to disengage from the reactionary tone that we've taken to reporting on this process, and really own our side to it. And then from our perspective, not engage in that reactionary pause anymore, because the fact that people are shocked by this man doing anything is shocking to me, because that's his modus operandi. And so I think that if you look at the fact that he's really fueled by that attention, and that's kind of one way that he gets that significance and remains relevant in the headlines. If that goes away, I think we have more bargaining power.
Wow, interesting point. The other day I was in meditation, and I was just sitting with, I call God Baba, and I was saying to Baba, what are we all learning? Because it's been such a blessing in the way that our brother, you know, President Trump has awakened us up. And it was such a very pure, deep signal, Mastin. And Baba said, in my silent moment at 3:15 in the morning, he said, well, what's happening is that they've given their minds, they've allowed him to take up a lot of space in their mind and not me. And so why we're not so clear is that if you let me have more space in your mind, you'll be very clear as to what you must do. And that is to bring me down here more so I can remove the deception and the murkiness that you're all going through. And let me tell you, after I woke up to that, I was so clear about my own understanding of how I need to keep removing, you know, my own little stuff that might be sitting inside. Yeah. I want to talk about your new book before I get you off
That's
the
really
air.
Thank you.
You have a new book coming out. It's going to be published, hopefully, later this year. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what we can expect?
Yeah, I'm excited for this. This book is 10 years in the making.
Wow.
I've been working privately with clients in groups and one-on-one for the last decade or so. And really, you know, as I said earlier, getting down to the root cause of what keeps them stuck, the trauma, the deeper issues. And I've really found that when you can clear that root cause and align with your life's purpose, like literally you will become unstoppable and every area of your life improves. So this book is the framework for how I do that. It's called Claim Your Power, and it's a 40-day journey to discover, live, and thrive in your life's purpose. And it's a really unique book because we really help you get clear on the root cause of why you're stuck, and then we help you move forward, because I've seen a lot of folks who take two steps forward and three steps back over and over and over again in the direction of creating their dreams. And
mm-hmm.
I've asked myself, why is that? And so after working with thousands of people over the past decade or so, really gotten clear on why that is. And so this book is a guidebook, and I call it a map from the trenches, because I've been in the trenches with people who have gone through some of the worst things in the world and really just seen how they've overcome it. And so I think that this will be a really great contribution to anybody who's really looking to make a mark and to live their purpose and to stop stopping themselves and get out of their own way. It's going to be a really I'm excited for it.
Well, good luck for that, because I think it'll be timely. Any events coming up for you, talks on the way from Aston?
No, I'm kind of hunkering down until our book launch in the fall. So I'm just, you know, kind of hunkering down. I'm going to be on a, probably a 30-40 city tour, which will be a big expenditure of energy. So nothing until then, really.
Well, please put D.C. on your map, and we'll be happy to host you at the Meditation Museum. Don't you forget.
Oh, my goodness. I would love that. By the way, I always want to tell you this. That time that we spent together in California during the Belief screening, we got probably 10 phone calls to our room for my girlfriend, Jenna, and they were all asking for you. I was like, why? Who calls her? I didn't know about you just yet. And I was like, why is everyone calling you Sister Jenna? And why do they want to meet with you? I've never met any of these people. Who are these people that you're holding back from? It's really funny.
Now you know we've got some karmic link somewhere.
No, it's so good. It's so good.
Oh, that's crazy. Wow. It reminds me of Marianne Williamson, who's hosting her Sister Giant coming up in February. And I was just with her a few days ago at Unity. And she came in the room. We were behind stage. She goes, you know, I think about you all the time because every time Sister Giant comes up, so does Sister Jenna. And I just start laughing. And I said, I love it. I love it. Anyway, Mastin, it's been amazing. Just lovely having this conversation with you. And I could only continue to wish you just always the best in life. And please, let's stay in touch and keep doing wonders.
I would love that. Thank you so much for having me, and I will see you in D.C.
There you go. Take care, Mastin. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
There's just nothing like the voices. I only speak from the voice of my antiquity, but these voices of energy, looking at both sides of the spectrum, being progressive, moving forward. Mastin shared a lot with so much with us today. And for me, it all boils down to respect yourself, love yourself, maintain courage. Because as he says, his mission is to connect people back to what makes them happy. Because happy people will make better choices, and better choices will make for a better planet. Thank you so much for joining us, everyone. Don't forget to look up Sister Giant, or the big conference that's coming up. I think that's February 2nd to the 4th, I believe. So please go to the website and find out what they're doing there. And also feel free to stop by the Meditation Museum if you happen to be in the nation's capital. We're going to be launching our Letting Go Meditation CD very soon as our gift to humanity. Find a way in how we can center ourselves and really have a place for us to come from a more stronger perspective. So please look out for that. I'm going to end today's conversation with a song that means a lot to me. And it's by Kristen Hoffman. It's called Between the Veils. Listen to these words. I find them quite meaningful. Remember, everyone, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission, and we are here to love each other the same. Take care of yourselves. Om Shanti. Thank you.
like a shockwave straight through your heart. Wanting you, babe.